Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to the 50th, 50, 50 sans, 50th episode of the PEM podcast, Psychic Eye Mystery Podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Laurie, with my schmabulous sister, Sandy, as my co-host. Gosh, I just ran out of words to say. Hi! That was a lot of fanfare. Sans and I are dragging today. We're both going, I'm dragging a little bit. And you're like, wow, I'm so glad I tuned in for this. I'm like, I have the winter malaise, you know? It's just like every day is Groundhog Day, gray, cold, snowing.
Couple sucks. More weeks and it'll be spring.
Maybe for you.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm in theory a couple June. More weeks. Yeah. 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 I hear you.
Oh man, we don't really have a spring anymore in Michigan. It's just cold and then hot. Like a 70 degree day is as rare as a leprechaun. it's either 50s, low 60s, or it's 80, 85. There's really just never a nice spring anymore, which is a bummer because I love spring.
Yeah.
Second only to fall. For me.
No.
But you're a winter, or excuse me, you're a summer person.
I love summer. Love it. Yeah. I cry when fall comes. Hate it.
That's my favorite season.
Yeah, it's because then it's like three seasons of bleh, and then summer.
The fall is the best season by far. No. By far. It's beautiful. It smells fantastic. Cool days, crisp nights. It's wonderful. I don't know how you can't love it.
Well, come to my backyard and rake my leaves, and then you understand why.
Boop, 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 boop. Hello, do you blow leaves into a thing? Yes, can I hire you to
for put the leaves
in my sister's backyard?
Dollars.
Thank you. Yes, that's the extent of how much help I will be. Just that.
Well, I bought a snowblower a couple of years ago because the sons are no longer home to help me shovel. So I bought a snowblower, used it twice. And after two uses, you're supposed to change the oil. I'm like, what? So I call this service and they come, they pick up my snowblower $200 later.
A riveting story.
I know it is. But I haven't been able to use it. And I'm pissed that I spent $200 tuning up my freaking snowblower and there's no snow. There's no snow. No
$200 snow. To tune up a snowblower?
Welcome to New England.
Oh God, that is robbery. That is absolutely makes you want to start a business of tuning up snowblowers.
I really don't.
That's a cash cow.
I really don't.
Right. Like I can kind of picture like, oh, it's a woman's voice. It's $200.
Yeah.
Man's voice. It's $100.
Yeah.
That's, no. We know how that goes.
I do.
So anyway. All right. I have a fantastic anecdote to share. Read for a woman week or two ago. And she was a lovely woman. And I can't remember what human first came in. It might have been her mother. I think it might have been. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was her mother. Anyway, so talking along, you know, connecting her to her mother or grandmother. I can't remember which one it was. And then all of a sudden, this white cat kind of walks into my mind, you know. And so, like, it just grabbed my attention. And again, there's no English exchange, there's no words exchanged, but like the sort of presence of this cat was like everything. I couldn't really get around the cat to get it to anybody else. The cat needed to be noticed. So I asked her, I said, did you have a white cat that crossed over? And she, you know, immediately missed it up and said she had to put her cat down 2 weeks prior, or excuse me, 2 days prior, 2 days prior. So I said, well, on the other side. And then this cat kept showing me a gray cat and smoke. And I had the feeling that the gray cat was still alive. So I said, do you have a gray cat? And she kind of went like this, like she has more than another cat at home, right? So she's kind of doing this. And I said, and then the cat started showing me snow. The white cat started showing me snowflakes, right? So I see the smoke, the snowflakes, snow, snowflakes, or excuse me, smoke, snowflakes. So I asked her, I said, do you have a cat named Smokey? And was the white cat's name like winter or snow? And she goes, Smokey and Frost, Frosty, Smokey and Frosty. So
I was thinking it was snowblower, but
it was, but she shortened it. So the nickname was Frosty. Snow blower. You know, now we need to see video if there's an intense winter snowfall for you in New England.
Yeah, it's gonna be
you
like
using like pics or it didn't happen kind of thing.
Okay.
So
good to know.
I just imagine, because you know, you're tiny, I just imagine this thing is bigger than you.
It has its moments, yes.
I am glad you got one because it's been 20 years. I've been telling you need to get one. I remember we, Sans and I lived together for like a year or so. And there was a 23 inches of snow fell in 24 hours. And she handed me a shovel. It's like, get to work. And I got to work. And it was.
So did I. I was out there. I was. I've never not shoveled my driveway.
Let's okay. No, I believe you. I just don't remember.
Yeah.
I think you did the walk, but I did the driveway.
No. So,
yeah. 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 Because I remember. Anyway, so that was my anecdote. I thought it was really adorable that this cat came around. And then he kept showing me that, he would curl up around her head. He was still kind of, his presence was still curling up around her head. She's like, that's exactly where he slept. And then he did something really funny. He like got up on his haunches and just started punching. I had a feeling like he would go at the dogs. So I said, did he hate dogs? And she's like, oh, he would take them on. So I just thought it was like so much information to come from a cat. So yes, they all cross over. They all hang out, wait for you to cross as well. I really do believe that sometimes they'd come back through and are your pet again. I'm hopeful because, I have a little beloved over there and I would love to get her back. But if not, they wait for you. So they are there when you cross, and they are taken care of by your relatives on the other side. So if you have a beloved little fur baby that crossed over, you will be reunited again. So not to fear. Book promotion, The Ghoul Next Door. I was kind of proud of this title. Anyway, in this, this is the, I forget whatever number in the Ghost Hunter Mysteries series with MJ and Gilly and Heath. Yeah, something like that. I don't know. They're 10 in total. This might have been 9, 8, 9, something like that. And in this one, Kat, Gilly, and Heath are back in Boston, and MJ, Gilly, and Heath are back in Austin. Ah, Boston. My God. This is your brain on drugs.
You're really good at this book promotion
thing. I'm telling
you're
you,
really good at it.
I
wrote
really
this
woken
book.
Up yet.
Oh, no.
I think that I'm still half asleep. MJ, Gilly, and Heath are back in Boston. MJ's former love interest, Stephen, the doctor, shows up and is newly engaged. His fiance's brother has been possessed, and it appears he's committed a murder. And MJ, Gilly, and Heath have to get to the bottom of what this whole possession thing is about. So another creepy one. So that's it. That's all I got. Now we can get to the main part. I will hand it over to you, my gorgeous sister. Take it away.
Okay. So this case was recommended by me and Mac. Thank you very much. I always appreciate when you guys offer up a case for us to consider, and definitely am folding it into our schedule of mysteries. This is about Russell and Shirley Dermond, who were murdered in and around their home on Lake Oconee in Georgia. So the case begins on May 6th, 2014. A concerned neighbor of Russell and Shirley Dermond went to their waterfront home on Lake Oconee to check on them after the couple had missed attending a May 3rd Kentucky Derby party over the weekend. With no response to his knocks, the neighbor entered the home through an unlocked door. After wandering through the house calling out to the couple, the neighbor discovered Russell's decapitated body surrounded by towels lying in a small pool of blood on the floor of his two-car garage. Russell's wife, Shirley, was nowhere to be found. Almost 9 years later, this unsolved murder mystery is now a cold case. Born June 6, 1925, to parents Russell Charles Dermond and Margaret Tedesco Dermond, Russell J. Durman was a native of Hackensack, New Jersey, and was raised in Westwood. His father was a multi-time national kayaking champion and a two-time Olympian competing in the 1956 and 1960 games, and he later served as on the Olympic Committee. Russell was a veteran of the U.S. Navy and served our country during World War II. He married Shirley Wilcox on December 15, 1950, and they went on to have four children, sons Mark, Keith, and Bradley, and daughter Leslie. After working as a clock manufacturing executive and a fast food franchisee of several Hardee's locations in Atlanta, Russell retired in 1994. Shortly thereafter, the Durmans moved into Great Waters Reynolds on Lake Oconee, a gated community with security officers and video surveillance cameras located about 12 miles northeast of Eaton, Georgia. The Durman property included a dock that backed up to a cove on Lake Oconee. Russell and Shirley were members of the Oconee Community Church, and spent time, like most retirees, playing golf, reading, gardening, walking, and playing bridge. The last time anyone saw Russell alive was on May 1st, 2014, as he was running errands in Eaton, and then at the Publix supermarket in Lake Oconee in neighboring Greene County. Later that afternoon, Russell and Shirley talked with their son Brad over the telephone. 5 days later, investigators were called to the Durman's Lake Oconee home to determine what had happened to 88-year-old Russell and his 87-year-old wife, Shirley. Russell was an apparent victim of a violent murder. He was found inside the garage of the couple's 3,200-square-foot home on the floor, slumped behind one of the couple's cars, surrounded by a small pool of blood, decapitated. Due to gunpowder residue found on Russell's shirt collar, police suspect that he was killed by a gunshot wound to the head, and to prevent authorities from recovering the bullet, which could have been traced, the perpetrators decapitated the 88-year-old senior, likely post-mortem. His head has never been found. With no sign of Shirley in the Durman's home, authorities suspected that she had been kidnapped. The Durman's children resigned themselves to the fact that they would likely never see their mother alive again. And they were right. 10 days after discovering Russell dead in the couple's two-car garage, Shirley's body was found floating on the Greene County side of Lake Oconee by two men fishing nearby. The 78-year-old had been beaten to death after suffering three deep head wounds from a blunt object, tied by a rope to cinder blocks, and then dumped into the lake. Detectives and deputies from Putnam County Sheriff's Office called in the FBI for assistance to assess the evidence gathered in the case. The murders of Russell and Shirley Durman are believed to have occurred 4 days before the Russell's body was discovered. The FBI created a profile of the perpetrator, likely a male subject who was liked and was familiar with guns and knives. At first, the murders appeared to be the work of professionals. The beheading was meant to send a message, but the FBI couldn't find any connections to the Durmans in any of their investigations, and the couple had no known enemies. The sheriff believes that the couple knew at least one of the perpetrators, as there was no sign of a struggle. He suspects that perhaps the offender or offenders went to the Durmans' home intending to rob the couple of money or something of value. However, nothing in the home was stolen. While the Reynolds Great Waters neighborhood is home to some of the country's wealthiest citizens, the Durmans were simply comfortable and far from the richest residents living inside the gated community. At the time of the murders, the security cameras were not working at the Great Waters guardhouse, so it's uncertain how the killer or killers made their way into and around the gated community, whether by vehicle or by boat. Authorities are certain that Shirley's body was disposed of by boat. However, the Durmans no longer owned a boat, so the boat that was used to dump Shirley into Lake Oconee is unknown to authorities. Adding to the complicated facts of the case, there are multiple crime scenes. The garage where Russell was decapitated postmortem and the lake where Shirley's body was found are two known crime scenes. However, due to a lack of physical evidence, authorities do not believe Shirley was killed in her home. And while investigators suspect that Russell suffered a gunshot wound to the head, they do not know the location of where he was shot or with what type of gun. The sheriff believes that with two different manners of death, he suspects that there were multiple killers. While investigators don't have any known suspects in the Durman case, the sheriff has collected some physical evidence that could eventually confirm the killer's identity. The Durman's oldest son, Mark, was murdered in Atlanta in the year 2000 while attempting to purchase crack cocaine. Investigators do not believe that there is any connection between Mark's murder and the murder of Russell and Shirley 14 years later. Mark was a user, and his killer is currently incarcerated. Speculation that the Durmans were targeted for revenge is far-fetched at best. The Durmans' three surviving children, sons Keith and Bradley, currently living in Florida, and daughter Leslie, living in North Carolina, all passed FBI-administrated polygraphs. Nothing links them to their parents' murders. Since the killings, there have been virtually no crimes within Great Waters to speak of other than some car vandalism, fueling the notion that whoever committed this gruesome crime went to the Derman home because they thought the Dermans had something of value or had access to something of great value. Initially, investigators pursued multiple leads to find the perpetrators and their motive for killing the Dermans. However, over time, with few tangible results, the investigation has grown cold. The Putnam County Sheriff, Howard Sills, remains convinced that multiple people were involved in the double homicide and that somebody, somewhere, knows something. Russell and Shirley Derman were married for over 60 years, and they lived peacefully for 15 years inside their Reynolds Great Waters home on Lake Oconee. The events leading up to the murder of this elderly couple remain unknown. Their three children and nine grandchildren would certainly like answers, and to ultimately see justice served for the untimely death of their loved ones. My sources for this story include Wikipedia, Murders of Russell and Shirley Derman, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Decapitation Mystery, Russell Derman Was a World War II Vet and Golfer by Rodney Thrash, May 16, 2014, Union Recorder, Somebody Knows, and There's More Than One Person Involved in This, Putnam County Sheriff's Embarrassed Because Double Murder Remains Unsolved by Billy Hobbs, May 8, 2019, and finally, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, 5 years later, Murders of Lake Oconee Couple Continue to Confound by Christine Boone, May 5th, 2019. So what are your impressions? Yeah, really so awful.
Sad. You know, it's interesting how crimes of opportunity, like we always think crimes of opportunity are targeting, you know, women, young women, right? But we've done a few cases where they've just been elderly. You know, just kind of helpless and elderly. So these, you know, this poor couple, they were very close to 90. You know, easy victims, I think. So when I looked at the house, I would agree there were multiple perpetrators, multiple killers. When I looked at the house, the front of the house looks like it's one level, but from the lake, it's huge. It's massive, right? So, my thinking is that there were at least two. I kind of think that there were three men involved, and they got into a boat in the lake and they cased the lake. They discovered that the Dermans' home was in a cove, so it wasn't easily seen. And it did look very large from the lake. So determining whether it was one of the smaller homes or one of the larger homes, you wouldn't necessarily know from looking at it from the lake. The access to the house was really easy. You just dock and, you know, anywhere. You don't have to dock at the dock. You can dock to the side and just kind of walk up. If you've got a small motorboat or a rowboat, whatever, you can get to shore pretty easily. There's a lot of woods to the sides of the Derman's home, so there's plenty of cover. It's not like their neighbors were close and could see or hear anything. So I have a feeling that they suspected that wealthy people just keep cash on hand. I don't think that they wanted jewelry or things that they would have to fence, because that could absolutely lead a trail back to them, but cash is hard to track. So I have a feeling that something escalated, and I feel like Shirley was hurt. I don't know if she was killed there or not, but I feel like she was hurt. And her husband was then taken out into the garage. They had to kill him at that point and executed. I think absolutely that he was so sadly decapitated because they needed the bullet. Obviously, that bullet would probably link them back to another crime. So the gun was probably tagged in another murder or shooting. And there might have been clues from one case that led to the other. So they were covering their tracks. I think Shirley was, unfortunately, I feel that she was just a witness to what was happening. Her husband probably tried to come to her rescue and was summarily murdered on the spot. She might have, you know, pled for her life or whatever, but, you know, she was taken by a robot, I think, and then murdered. Out in the lake and then dumped. It's just, what a horrible crime. What a terribly horrible. My heart really goes out to those children, because you forever live not in the memories of how wonderful your childhood was and how wonderful your parents were. You live in kind of that ongoing memory of what must have happened to your parents on that day. And it's really difficult to think of your parents outside of that traumatic event. So it probably has just left such a terrible note of tragedy on their minds. And it's just heartbreaking. I doubt highly any of these guys will ever be brought to justice. It's what, 8 years later? And, you know, no leads, no nothing. So I don't think that they were from the area. I think that they knew about this community, that it had a lot of wealthy people, easy access from the lake. The house was prime for breaking in and taking whatever they could. If they had approached from the road, then there could have been cameras, there would have been security gates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all they had to do was find an access point to drop a small boat, or shit, even a kayak or something into, I doubt it was a kayak, into the water and row up and do their thing. So just sad, very, very sad.
I understand that the sheriff has submitted to the FBI cell phone geolocating data. But if these guys came in off the water and didn't have their phones with them, it'd be hard to potentially link them.
And it was 2014. I mean, nowadays we carry our phones wherever we go. Back in 2014, we mostly did, but like, I don't know that they were as, they might've been, you know, in 2014. We might've been as dependent, but if these guys were at all seasoned crooks, which it really looks like they were, but they knew not to bring their cell phones with them, so, or turn them off.
Do you think these men are in their 20s, 30s?
I got that they were like mid to late 30s, early 40s. Like, they feel a little older. They don't feel young. They feel a little bit older. I feel like there's a history of crime for all what I suspect is three of them. It just feels like there's two that were brutal. And one was either the lookout or the getaway boat driver or whatever. I think that the two of them really terrorized this couple and murdered them. That's my feeling. And the third just feels a little bit minor because I can feel the sort of violence attached to two of them, but there's also a third person kind of there. So
it's a
I don't
shame
know if they're related. My hunch is that at least two of them were probably related. You know, because you're not going to snitch on family. You might snitch on each other if you don't have a family connection. But my thinking is at least two of these men were related.
And you don't think that this will be solved?
No, it doesn't feel like what I do when I try and see if something will be solved is I kind of point my radar forward in time to see if there's any emotion around a particular topic. And all I get is emptiness when I do that. So for me, that means that it's an open-ended question that will never be answered. Really hope I'm wrong. I absolutely can be, but I don't, there's no there for me to glob onto.
It's a shame.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. So that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Poor people, you know, like, I don't know. There's just something so incredibly tragic about these two people make it to their late 80s. And this is how they die. It's just, it's so unfair. But then again, they're on the other side. They're good. You know, they're fine. It's just here. They had to experience that trauma. That's what's so sad.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you for your impressions on that. I think when I first came across this case, it just was so eerie, right?
Yeah.
They're found in two different locations.
Mm-hmm.
They're elderly. Like,
right.
Why? Why these two people?
Right. When they clearly weren't the richest, you know, in the neighborhood, but you really would only know that if you were driving around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so these guys obviously would have probably stuck out if they were casing the neighborhood by driving. So if they headed by boat, maybe at night,
yeah,
who's going to see them?
Yeah. And like you said, it looks like a large piece of property from the
rear. It looks like it's like three stories and floor to ceiling windows and different almost wings attached to it. So it looks like a much larger, it's 3,500 square feet.
3,500 square feet, yeah.
Yeah, that's still, that's a lot of house.
That is.
So you don't really get to appreciate it from the road. You appreciate it from the lake. So I think that just its location, surrounded by woods in a cove, easy, easy hit.
Yeah.
So.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you again for your impressions on this. And thank you, me and Mac, for your suggestion. And please continue to share with us your comments and your feedback. We really take it to heart and appreciate any
just
suggestions.
Just the nice stuff, not the shitty stuff.
Very rare. And appreciate any suggestions that you guys may have. So we'll keep recording and
keep on trucking, man.
Yeah.
Keep on trucking.
Thank you for your encouragement as fans. We appreciate it.
Yes, yes, yes. If you enjoyed this podcast or any other, please hit the like button. Please subscribe if you're not already subscribed. If you'd like more information about me, my books, or to book a private reading with me, please head to victorialaurie.com. Toot. I swear I want to bring like pom-poms and just be like, go team at the end. Like, that's the end.
Challenge accepted.
Jazz hands. Jazz hands. Okay. Anyway. All right. I love you, Sans. Thank you again.
You
this was great. And we'll talk soon. Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, right. Everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.